Atlantis Enterprises versus E&B Giftware et al., 2010-12-13. I'm here with Mr. Dunn with no oral opposition today.
That's correct, Your Honor. Good morning. If it pleases the court, my name is Gerard Dunn from New York. Your Honor, this was a design patent case that was filed pre-Egyptian Goddess out in California. After somewhat extensive litigation, the patent owner, plaintiff, moved to dismiss the case without prejudice. The judge converted that to a dismissal with prejudice on our motion. Then we moved for attorney's fees. Attorney's fees were denied in, if I can say in real quickly, essentially because the judge, in her discretion, even if there had been extraordinary litigation, had been a violation of 285 as an extraordinary case, was going to rule there would be no attorney's fees in her discretion. And it's our opinion that the court below is an abuse of that discretion by having made what I would consider a clear error in judgment and weighing the relevant facts that need to be considered. And one of the most crucial facts, which I think was brought out to the judge and to opposing counsel right from the beginning of the case, is that the same patent had been litigated previously in New York in a preliminary injunction hearing in the Southern District of New York. And in that case, again, a pre-Egyptian guise, there were extensive proceedings by the inventor, declarations and statements and briefing as to what the points of novelty are. The points of novelty are not an accused device.
But as you know, the trial court found that your side had engaged in a variety of activities that caused her to say that your asking for attorney's fees constituted chutzpah. And you know the definition of chutzpah.
Yes, sir. I'm from New York. You have to.
Continued the litigation without a good faith basis, made bad faith evidentiary objections, vexatious motion for certified interlocutory appeal.
That
highly
was a
questionable litigation tactics. Papers were rife with error.
That's plaintiff. That she's complaining to the plaintiffs with the vexus and the.
Well, okay.
Our complaints.
There are a whole lot of actions by your side that the judge decided constituted reasons not to award attorney fees.
Your Honor, I'll explain that. One was
the judge focused primarily, except for a footnote, and I was going to ask you about the footnote. The judge focused on your arguments in support of your motion for attorney fees as the reason for denying your motion. That's where she found your conduct was
part of it. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, one of the arguments was that we had cited this California case, Ninth Circuit law, and the fact that when the case was converted to dismissal with prejudice, then the defendant did become the prevailing party. She had ruled we're not a prevailing party because there's been no adjudication on the merits. So we cited Ninth Circuit law, and she said we misled her because that's a federal circuit decision. Of course, the law is exactly the same.
And she did find you a prevailing party.
Correct. And the law in the federal, this circuit and the Ninth Circuit is if there's a substantial change in the relationships of the parties, you're prevailing and you're entitled to whatever.
You got costs, right?
We got costs, yes, sir. We got cost.
Well, I understood the judge's point there to be that citing those cases was unhelpful, at least, to her because there was direct on-point federal circuit authority, and these cases, at most, would be analogous authority, and so it was, at minimum, a lack of diligence on your part.
Well, it was a mistake. I just assumed there was a procedural issue on what a prevailing party was who didn't check the federal circuit because I was trial counsel judge. That it was it's a procedural issue on how you would define a prevailing party. I mean, that was a mistake. But it was the same
because
law.
The Ninth Circuit case, as a matter of fact, that you cited wasn't even citing federal law. That was a decision under Hawaii law. It was a diversity case.
No, it was the Ninth Circuit law, though, about what how you define a prevailing party.
I believe that I would defer to you if you have checked it, but I just finished reading it about 10 minutes before I came down here.
Okay.
And my understanding was they were talking about the application of Hawaii attorney fee eligibility under a Hawaii statute, which would mean that the question of prevailing party would be dictated by Hawaii law. Now, it may be that it's the same standard, but it's a bit of a leap to go from a state law attorney fee statute to say that, well, that's the applicable test for a patent prevailing party. It may be the same test, but that's a lot to ask a busy district judge to extrapolate from when there is a Federal Circuit case right on point.
Correct.
So I don't think it's fair to say that she was coming completely out of left field and criticizing you for that.
No. Okay. I'm not. Wait a minute. I'm not saying that. I'm sorry if you misunderstood from our briefing. We're talking about how the equities should be balanced here. We had a situation where the plaintiff, the patent owner, did no pre-suit investigation, where the California attorney that filed the complaint in California was working as an attorney in the case in New York, where he prepared the papers as to what the points of novelty were, which are not found in the accused device. And all during the litigation, we brought this to the judge's attention in a motion to dismiss instead of in lieu of an answer, and tried to convert to a summary judgment motion. They objected to our evidence of what happened in New York. And so the judge said, well, under Rule 56F, they're entitled to discovery. We went through all of that discovery and proved that not only did this happen in New York, that these declarations were, see, the declaration was unsigned because of a preliminary injunction, and it hadn't had a signature with the attorneys represented in court that this is what the inventor would say if he was here.
So you're saying, Mr. Dunn, that even if you accept all of the criticisms that the district court judge had with respect to your application for attorney fees, when you weigh those against the conduct of the other side, Atlantis, that was not challenged, you're saying that it's an abuse of discretion to not rule the fees are justified.
Yes, and it pales in significance, but this court stands for an abuse of discretion. One of the factors is, was there a clear error in judgment in failing to weigh the relevant factors? There wasn't any weighing of the most relevant factor in any patent infringement case where there's bad faith asserted against the patent owner, and that is, what was the reason for filing suit and what was the justification? The court did not go into that. We had put substantial evidence that the case was filed in bad faith. We had to go through all this evidentiary procedures in the Southern District to establish that the plaintiff's counsel in California was the one that had prepared all those documents to show what the points of novelty were and made no investigation or no evaluation. This is clearly a violation of the standards you've put down in VIEW Engineering and its progeny about what are the duties of a patent owner before you file suit and then start demanding
retribution. One question I wanted to ask, and it's in footnote 8 on page A5 of the appendix, the judge says, although the court focuses its analysis on defendant's misconduct as it relates to the pending motion, which is what we've been discussing, such failings were not limited to the pending motion. Now, I looked through the appendix. Do you have any idea as to what the judge is referring there? I mean, the one thing I did see was where the judge in the claim construction analysis said that your argument based on judicial estoppel was not well taken or something like that. But do you have any ideas
But the judicial estoppel argument wasn't well taken because we couldn't prove that all of these things had happened in the Southern District on the preliminary injunction motion because we were being frustrated with attorney-client privilege claims and discovery, had to go through extensive motions to compel at the Southern District level. So that's why we couldn't prove it, because all during this time we had these documents, but we couldn't authenticate it. Well, she said they were not self-authenticating, even though they were filed in the ECF, electronic case filing systems. She was not accepting judicial notice that they were evidentiary, and we couldn't get any agreement from opposing counsel that these were in fact correct documents, and we were being obstructed in all our depositions by asserting attorney-client. So, but yes, what she was talking, I think one thing she was talking about is that that we had argued against the stay in view of Egyptian Goddess. And what we had argued, because we had notified the court of Egyptian Goddess and it said this is after the per curiam order from this court that was going to revisit Egyptian Goddess. We said this is going to be a sea change in design patent law, but we objected to staying discovery because it would still be the Gorham issues of substantial similarity or on the ordinary observer test. So they should, and we wanted the discovery of what happened in New York to go forward. That was stayed when she stayed in view of waiting for the decision Egyptian Goddess. We were again frustrated in getting the depositions of the attorneys in New York to document that the documents that were filed in New York were, in fact, not only well known to plaintiff in California, but plaintiff's counsel, but he had participated in their drafting. And we didn't want the stay of that discovery. In fact, one of the arguments she's talking about is how we're asking for attorney's fees during the stay was because we had to go to the Southern District Judge and not only explain the stay to our clients and go through all of that, but we had to explain to the Southern District Judge why he now could not rule on our motion. We're asking him, you know, to stay and not rule on our motions to compel discovery, which to me was extraordinary fundamental to this case. How could a plaintiff file this case knowing the points of novelty are not even close to them existing, and then failing, once we had challenged that, failing to come up during litigation with any kind of evidentiary basis for it, and then in response to the attorney's fees notion say, oh, I discussed this with an engineer and a patent attorney, and naming these names for the first time then we had asked for him discovery.
What you're saying is the other side behaved badly.
Oh, it's horrible, yes.
But, I mean, this is an abuse of discretion issue, and the trial court said your side behaved badly too.
So I'd like to explain that we did, that's one of the issues that when Judge Schnall asked me about, yes, we opposed the stay because we wanted to proceed forward at the Southern District to prove what essentially was the fraud being performed before the court by California counsel. We also had, he argued about part of our, what we did wrong was asking for attorney's fees during the stay. And again, as I explained, we had work to do during the stay. Also, there are attorney's fees. Once the Egyptian Goddess, Procurum Egyptian Goddess 2 came down from this court, we had to do a lot of extensive work in analyzing that and explaining that to our client, how it would affect this litigation, and then making the appropriate motions before the judge to essentially reinstitute and go back. But the sealed basketball term, no harm, no foul. We relied on Ninth Circuit law, but we should have cited the exact same law from the federal circuit. We didn't mislead the judge on whether or not we were the prevailing party. We were the prevailing party under this circuit's law. Yes, we cited the wrong case, and yes, Your Honor, it was under Hawaii attorney fee statute that the Ninth Circuit was ruling on, but it was still the Ninth Circuit law as to what is a prevailing party in litigation, the fact that the relationships have been changed. The patent owner now had, there was no infringement. So that was, and this was all, by the way, after summary judgment motions, everything that had been done, they say, we want to go home and pretend it never happened. And we were put to substantial attorney's fees. And I believe the judge was a little bit nitpicking on what we did wrong in citing Ninth Circuit versus Fed Circuit law, which didn't change the law, to justify them actually, what I would say, Your Honor, in all due respect, was a fraud before the court in refusing to authenticate these documents, fighting us at every turn on these documents, which is why we were denied our summary judgment when we filed initially. The judge denied summary judgment under 56F, giving him time to discover whether these documents were genuine when they prepared them. This was the inception of the case. We were denied on the stay motion, which she was objecting. We couldn't prove the judicial notice aspects of these documents because they denied that they were truthful. The other side denied they were truthful, and we eventually proved that they actually prepared them. So this is substantial litigation misconduct. This is the kind of thing this court should not countenance. And the fact that we cited Ninth Circuit versus Second Circuit law or objected to a stay in view of Egyptian Goddess because we want to proceed forward in New York with our motions to compel to prove this essential fraud against that was being made to the court. This is being held against us. And it's not, and when you're going to balance it all out, I think it's pretty clear, at least to me, it's pretty clear that the court made an error in judgment in weighing the relevant factors. She didn't even weigh the most relevant factor, and that was their good faith investigation, pre-suit investigation, to file that lawsuit. She never even concerned herself with that. And I believe this court has lectured patent owners enough that you must have a pre-suit investigation. You must have some benefit. You just don't.
You have to have an investigation, but we've not said that you have to have an opinion of counsel.
Correct.
But you represented to the trial judge in your reply that you have to have an opinion of counsel.
No, we didn't say that. We said that once you, she said we said that.
Well,
yes, she did say that.
You didn't say that.
We said that once you're challenged, you must come forward with affirmative evidence, like an opinion in counsel, and cited Brooks. We cited Brooks, and that's for our reliance upon
you. Well, you may be right, but let me go back and check, because I thought I had read in your reply that you said an opinion of counsel is required.
But if you look at the Brooks case, Your Honor, or cases of that magnitude, in fact, in Brooks, where they said there was a justifiable opinion, although it might have been wrong that it was a good faith opinion, they denied attorney's fees. This court was very clear in saying, this is what we're going to be looking to. Once you're challenged, and Your Honor, this may be a semantical difference, but it's not my opinion that you must have an opinion of counsel or you're dead as a patent owner. I don't believe that's the law.
No, it isn't required that you have an opinion
right.
of counsel.
Right.
Right. The question is whether you said that to the district judge.
I don't think you did, Your Honor, but I was very incensed when I read the opinion. She said that. I don't believe that was what we said.
What I think, it looked like from,
but
she criticized you for page 7, I think, of your reply brief, and what you said there was the law requires filing a suit for patent infringement not be taken lightly, and pre-suit investigation from competent patent counsel are required before filing suit against a competitor. Atlantis and its prior counsel wrongfully failed in this duty.
Right. Judge Bryson asked me if I was saying you must have an opinion from counsel.
That's what you're required.
That an opinion is required. You have to have a pre-suit investigation. You have to have someone of competence.
This was what pulling it up on Pacer, this was what you said.
Yeah, that's right. I agree. I mean, I don't believe I said you must have an opinion that you can show to the court, an attorney, which is what I believe she held. Yes, you have to have pre-suit investigation. There has to be, that's Rule 11 requires that. I mean, this is not something new. There has to be some sort of investigation from some competent counsel that there is, in fact, a basis here to file suit. And when you have a situation where there is nothing, that's been done. Nothing was done.
Anything further, Bill?
No.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn.
Thank you, Judge.
Take the case under advisement.